I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Bills beat reporter for Syracuse.com, Matt Perino joins us right now as we kind of take a look at some notable teams across the league. Matt, how are you?
Hey, Matt.
I'm great, great. How are you guys?
We're doing well. So, you know, look, Buffalo's been a bit of a tortured city when it comes to the National Football League. Is this as much hope as that city's had in quite some time leading into this season?
It's kind of strange to say because your point, the last couple of decades have been pretty forgettable, especially that 17-year playoff drought. But it's almost as like, you know, the slate's been wiped clean. It's a whole new world living in Buffalo and, you know, cheering for the Bills. I mean, they're the heavy Super Bowl favorite right now. They were so even, you know, before they went out and signed Von Miller and had a pretty solid draft and, you know, filled a couple holes here and there in free agency. You know, they have arguably the best quarterback in the NFL. I mean, at least somebody in the conversation in Josh Allen. So to be a Bills fan in 2022 is an experience that a lot of the younger members of Bills Mafia, you know, they think that this is probably like the status quo where a lot of, you know, the old guard is like, appreciate where you're at.
So you talked about your quarterback, Josh Allen. Are you going to be covering the match coming up here June 1st and following him on the course? Are you going to be actually there?
No, they actually really limited the media availability for that. So a couple of us on the beat applied and were turned away. So obviously they want to keep it probably pretty low-key, some national outlets. But, yeah, he's excited about it. We talked to him about it yesterday, and his goal is going there and talking as much trash to Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers as he can. He doesn't necessarily know if the golf will hold up because, you know, that's something that, you know, as great of an athlete as these guys are, I mean, playing a different sport on that level and with that many people watching, it's got to be a little bit intimidating. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a couple shanks, even from Brady and Rodgers.
I do the play-by-play for Utah State in the Mountain West Conference, so I saw Josh Allen a couple times as the quarterback in Wyoming, and obviously you saw the skills, but wasn't a particularly accurate quarterback. His final year, he lost some weapons and, frankly, wasn't, you know, overwhelming as far as what we saw from him in terms of production there at Wyoming. So I'll admit I didn't anticipate he'd be a particularly great quarterback in the National Football League. Just your thoughts in watching his evolution, just how surprised were you with what they got in and what it eventually turned into and arguably one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League?
Mm-hmm. I started covering the team. My first day on the beat was training camp 2018, right after they drafted him, a couple months after that. And so I kind of went in with a pretty open mind. I had been covering the UFC, so I wasn't really heavily involved in the whole draft process. And obviously a big portion of the fan base wanted Josh Rosen, and some people wanted, were hoping Sam Darnold would fall. And so there's a lot of people that were upset with it, especially with the kind of project that he was. I liked a lot of what I saw early on, and honestly, had he turned into a bad quarterback, I probably would have gotten a lot of grief from the fan base because I didn't really see what everybody else was seeing. I thought you know, in the building, the way people talked about him, the plan they had for him, and then just what he can do with the football in his hands. Like, you saw pieces of that in his rookie season. I'll never forget that throw he made in the Jacksonville game to Robert Foster that went for like a 70-yard touchdown. He hung in the pockets, you know, stepped up and just put one on a rope, like across his body, like perfectly placed for an 70-yard touchdown pass. And I'm like, listen, it was one play, but there's only so many guys in this league that can do that. And then you combine his ability to run with the ball and the fact that linebackers have talked about just hating tackling the guy, and he's turned into this dual threat nightmare for opposing defenses. And I think that the way that he's progressed year to year with his accuracy, with his placement on the ball, and all the work that he's done with Jordan Poyer out in California, you can never project that kind of thing. It's just got to be special to a guy. It's the same thing with Tom Brady. Like, his work ethic is kind of what separates him. Allen has a lot of that in him. And so that's the part I think it's hard to scout that. And it's something that the Bills felt strongly about that they had when they called his name in the draft.
So, Matt, we don't have an NFL team here, obviously, in the state of Utah. So we really love our college athletes, pay a lot of attention to them, give them a lot of attention on sports radio here. And you've got two of our favorites out of the state there in Buffalo with Zach Moss out of the University of Utah, and then a corner out of Weber State, Taron Johnson, who I think is going to continue to be fantastic. What do you think of those two individuals that you've got out there from the state?
I love Taron Johnson, man. Every chance I've gotten to talk to him in the locker room, the dude just is humble. He's always working. He's always kind of, you know, crafting and, like, how can he become a better version of himself? And what's great about his story is when he got to the league as a fourth-round draft pick, you know, it was up and down early on for him. He actually got benched in his second year. They brought in an undrafted free agent to start for him who got hurt in the game that Taron was benched in. Taron went back into the game, and he never relinquished that job again. And now, 4 years later, before the last season even ended, the Bills extended him and gave him, I think, what was the second richest contract for a slot corner in the NFL. And he's important to them because of the style of defense they play. They play 90% base nickel defense. So he's on the field as that slot corner, but in a lot of ways, he acts as that third linebacker with Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano. And he's so physical. He's so willing to get in the box and tackle, a lot like Jordan Poyer, who was an all-pro last year. They have a lot of, you know, that those qualities are very similar amongst their defensive backs and their willingness to play tough, play physical. Zach Moss, it just hasn't gone, you know, the way that he probably mapped it out. It's a guy that I still think that there is a bright future for if he can really come into training camp this year and, you know, flash. Devin Singletary is a free agent after next season. I think he's the number one running back going to camp. They drafted James Cook, who's going to be this kind of, you know, do it all kind of weapon. I almost envision like Singletary and James Cook, kind of like Mark Ingram and Zach and Alvin Kamara early on in his career. Like the way that they were able to kind of run that backfield in New Orleans. I think that that's what the Bills are hoping to see out of Singletary and Cook. But Moss can maybe, you know, if he does enough this year, move into that starter role if Singletary prices himself out. And then all of a sudden you got Moss in his fourth year, contract year, where he's got to prove it and get a big lion's share of the workload. So I don't think the door's shut on Zach Moss. He's had some injuries as well. I'm still higher on him than most. We'll see how this season plays out because there's only so many touches. When you play an offense with Josh Allen and you're a running back, you really got to make the most out of the few touches that you get in the game.
So when you look at this team, and obviously, as you mentioned, they're heavy, heavy Super Bowl favorites. Is there a weakness? Is there an area of concern that this team has going into this season?
You know, it's tough to poke a hole in that. I think the two areas where I'd say there's at least cause for discussion are maybe a cornerback. How long does it take Tre'Davious White to get back to his all-pro level after he suffered a torn ACL last year? And if he's not ready at the start, how much pressure does that put on first-round draft pick Kyer Elam out of Miami? And then on the offensive line, they lost a couple veterans in John Feliciano and Darrell Williams. Darrell Williams started games for them last year at right tackle and right guard. You know, they're really banking on Ryan Bates, who they matched an offer sheet. The Bears wanted him. They're giving him about $4 million a year. They're really putting a lot of hopes on him to be a guy that can kind of fill in there. They brought in Roger Saffold, who's been really good for the Rams and the Titans the last couple of years, but he's 34. He's had some shoulder issues, so that's going to be something to track. And then kind of maybe under, maybe not getting the national headlines right now, but Jordan Poyer, you know, he wants a new contract. And so if he's not a part of this thing, and I think that they get to a point where training camp begins and he shows up, because it's going to be costly for him not to. But the longer that kind of hangs over everybody's head here, I mean, he's a huge part of what they do defensively. And, you know, he was one of the first people that Sean McDermott signed when he came here, even right after the Bills, or right before the Bills hired Brandon Bean as their general manager. You know, McDermott really led that offseason, and he got Jordan Poyer, he got Micah Hyde, and they've been pretty much the leaders on this team, especially the defense, over the last 5 years. And with that kind of potential distraction looming, that could be a hole if they end up having to, you know, can't come up with something there, and they got to move Jordan Poyer. I really wonder how that, you know, changes things for this defense. Or maybe they do come to an agreement. Maybe it's a short-term thing. We'll see. But there's so much talent on this roster now. It's like Jordan Poyer did all this work to get to this point and may not be able to see it through, because he does want some security here moving into, you know, this last bite of the apple. So we'll see how that develops.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
I know you spend the bulk of your time with the Buffalo Bills. I got to imagine you watch a lot of the AFC East and just pay attention to some of those division partners. Who's going to be the better quarterback, Mac Jones or Zach Wilson?
That's a great question. I think I'm actually higher on Zach Wilson than most. He had a really bad rookie year, and you know they have a lot of work to do. But I like what the Jets have done to put weapons around him. They built up that offensive line, and I'm not sure that the Patriots are doing the same thing. I haven't seen enough, you know, moves around Mac Jones to where they're putting separators. They're adding bulk to that offensive line. If anything, they lost a couple guys off that offensive line, and they're trying to, you know, fill it with a guy in Cole Strange, who by all accounts was a massive reach. I just think that maybe Zach Wilson has the better surrounding cast right now. I like some of the stuff that I saw with Mac Jones, but we saw what happened in those last two games. The problem is he's got to play the Bills two times a year, and the one time he was actually, you know, average was when they only asked him to throw it three times in that windstorm. So I think that this is just a really bad division to be in if you're Mac Jones. It's a bad matchup against this Bills defense. Sean McDermott historically is just so tough to play against for young quarterbacks. He's, you know, even Tom Brady when he's in the division struggled against the Bills with McDermott here. So I might lean Wilson, and that might be a little bit of a controversial pick, but I definitely don't, as good as Miami, I think they're definitively the number two team in this division. I think that they might run into problems with the lack of talent at their quarterback spot.
So honestly, and you know, look, you're in Utah, you're not Buffalo, so you can, you know, on the air right now, so you can be honest with us, because for all of us out here that we watch all the NFL games, we see the highlights and we see what goes on in other cities, you got to paint a picture for us. Like, when you're walking around that stadium before a game, is it as rowdy and crazy as all the highlights that that float around there with the Bills Mafia?
Oh, yeah, man, especially the primetime games. I mean, you better, you know, A, be dressed warm if it's in November or December, and, you know, be ready for the unexpected. I mean, people are flying through tables. They're doing shots out of bowling balls. It is just a massive party. Yeah, so there's this one part of the tailgate. This guy has, his name is Kenny. They call him Pinto Ron because, like, 40 years ago, he showed up at the game in this old Pinto, and he, like, took all the stuff out of it, the insides, and they turned it into, like, a grill. Like, the hood of the car is, like, the grill, and it just sits, like, at the tailgate. And it's become, like, one of the most popular ones. If you've ever seen the videos, like, every game, they, before COVID, they'd set him up and they'd bring people on top of a bus and they'd all spray him with ketchup and mustard. And it's like this big thing. People have done feature stories on it, everything. So it's just a different level. Like, and that's one of the things when they were talking about a new stadium and potentially moving it downtown. A lot of the diehards that do go to the games were kind of against that because it's out in the suburbs, they're able to have that really rowdy, tailgating scene. And it's an experience. Everybody that I ever talk to that does it for the first time, it's eye-opening. It's something that you probably should do before you die, I think.
I wanted to throw this question at you. I played a few years in the league, and back in my time, they used to let reporters and media come into our locker room, and it felt pretty invasive, and there was a lot of access to the team and a lot of access to a lot of the guys. We are the NBA flagship here with the Utah Jazz, and we kind of watch what access we get, but is the access the same, Matt? Are you guys still able to get into the locker rooms and go to the locker of each individual on almost two or three times a week that occurred? Mm-hmm. Do you still have that level of access with the guys?
We did before COVID, and apparently it's coming back, but it's going to be team specific, so it's kind of still up in the air. Listen, I get where you're coming from. At times, you know, it's awkward from a standpoint of, A, just for a group of men walking in there, but we had a lot of women in our press corps in Buffalo. So walking into a locker room where a bunch of guys are walking around half naked, some fully naked, I mean, it's uncomfortable. It took me a while to get used to. I was not used to that setting, and I do agree it can be a bit invasive. I think that there's a way they can do it to where, you know, you have a portion of the time in the locker room where, you know the media is coming, and maybe it doesn't have to be that, way. I don't know what the exact answer is, but I will say from a media perspective, the one-on-one access to the guys in that relaxed setting, it really allows us to tell stories better, get to know them better, get to know the dynamics inside the team better. The thing with the NFL and why I think it's so important there is because it's such an absolutely starving fan base, you know, around the world for content around the NFL, and to create, you know, good content, it takes really digging into a lot of these subjects. And we just don't have any access to the players like that anywhere else. And I've developed really good relationships with a bunch of guys from that. But to your point, it can be a little awkward. You almost like get to a point where you're almost numb to it after like a season. Like you get into it and it's just like going to the office. But yeah, I get it, especially from a player perspective. I try to keep that in mind when we're doing that and be as respectful as we can.
And have you had an opportunity to catch up with BYU receiver, new pickup for you, Neil Powell?
No, I've not talked to him yet, but I will say he made one of the plays of rookie minicamp. We had the one open practice to the media, and the athleticism was off the charts. He made one just leaping grab and just outbodied the cornerback. It was a pretty big cornerback. It wasn't like a 5'10 guy. And, you know, the physical traits are something that I think the Bills talked about liking about him. So I'm interested to see him out on the practice field during training camp. There's been a couple really cool stories of guys that have really hung on with the Bills over the years on the practice squad. Duke Williams was one of those guys. He went to the CFL, former draft pick in the league, that kind of washed out a little bit, then came back. So there's opportunities. They like developing receivers. They want to put talent around Josh Allen, so he'll be a guy I'm watching in camp.
Well, we certainly appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us, and let's do it again here soon before the start of the season. This was fun.
Anytime, guys. Have a great weekend.
Thanks,
you got it. Matt Parrino, Bills beat reporter for Syracuse.com on the Shout podcast. Also does some work for TV station News 4 out of Buffalo as well.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.